Blog Talk Radio.
Cowards try to change our lives, change the things they despise in America. But heroes, fueled by freedom, that unalienable right to be, came to rescue the injured, rescue the innocent, rescue these truths we hold to be.
In part because that's my personality, in part because
I typically only do a show once or twice a week in most cases. You know, I'm always trying to find a topic that's interesting to me, hopefully interesting to you. I'm always scouring this portion of the Internet, that portion of the Internet. Sometimes I have a topic in mind, as I've said on several occasions, about midweek or so. Sometimes it's kind of a last-minute kind of thing. And as I was looking at some websites that actually I hadn't been to in a while, what came up was certainly 9/11 related topics, which of course is very appropriate, and particularly Saudi Arabia. And I wanted to kind of investigate, and not that I'm the first one to do this, obviously, but I kind of wanted to take a look at the Saudi Arabia connection to 9/11 and some of what's going on right now, even in Congress, as it relates to Saudi Arabia. And also are rather, to me at least, not all that beneficial and not all advantageous relationship, although it does certainly benefit the political class, if you will, weapons manufacturers, what have you. But our relationship with Saudi Arabia, that to me certainly is not, should not be regarded as a trusted ally. And I even look back to, again, certainly as a Christian, going back to the Bible and God's instructions to his people, to Israel, not to enter into a covenant with people who basically don't believe the same thing as you do, that don't believe in the same God as you do. And that doesn't mean, obviously, be at war with everyone or be at war with those types of people. Indeed, many times when Israel was doing things God's way, certainly for much of Solomon's reign, for a period of time during David's reign, and during some of the reigns of other good kings of Israel, and unfortunately more over Judah than Israel, but the land was at peace. Whether everybody believed in God as they did or not, believed in the God as they did, regardless, they were at peace. And certainly you can be at peace even with non-believers, non-believers in your neighborhood, non-believing countries. But you don't necessarily want to enter into alliances with people who don't have the same philosophy, same belief, religious or even political, as the case may be, that your nation does and that you as a people do yourselves. But anyway, I wanted to start today with what kind of got this whole ball rolling on Saudi Arabia and 9/11, because there's a bill that has been, it was introduced in the Senate, and it passed the Senate, I believe, unanimously, and it also then went to the House, where it passed the House, as I read it, also unanimously, and so it's now headed to Barack Obama's desk. Now, Barack Obama, President Obama, has vowed that he will veto this bill, which in one sense you kind of wonder why in the world he would want to do that, except again it kind of protects Saudi Arabia, which that will kind of be the pattern, unfortunately, of today's show. And I'll also try to, at least in my rather amateurish way of trying to explain why that might be, certainly in my opinion only. But anyway, there's this bill that has now made it its way through both chambers of Congress, both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives. And you may recall earlier this summer, they had actually President Obama, this administration, actually declassified the rather, I don't know, the rather infamous or rather controversial or before that completely hidden and obviously secretive and classified so-called 28 pages of the 9/11 Commission report as it related to Saudi Arabia. And at the time, I was just reading something even today, at the time it was speculated that President Obama did that because it kind of poked an eye in, or poked a finger in the eye of Saudi Arabia, and it actually maybe allowed President Obama to buddy up a little bit more to Iran. In retrospect and in hindsight, I don't necessarily know that that is the case, and actually I would suspect that it's not. If anything, and again, only my opinion, But to a certain degree, the political process in this country, even though sometimes it may seem like it doesn't, but to a certain degree, it does work. And if you put enough pressure on our elected representatives, on our president, on whomever the case may be, then sometimes things do happen. But anyway, there is this bill that will be going to President Obama's desk. And I'm reading from blacklistednews.com, and they reference the Free Thought Project, a website called, let me get it here, thefreethoughtproject.com. And the title is, "The bill in question passes the House, allowing citizens to sue Saudi Arabia for 9/11, but it's a cruel hoax. The U.S. House of Representatives, following the lead of the Senate, has passed a bill allowing Americans to sue Saudi Arabia over 9/11, only days before the attack's 15th, well, and of course they use the word anniversary. If they want to use anniversary, obviously they can use anniversary. But anyway, this, in theory, allows victim members or the families of 9/11 victims to sue the Saudi government. In theory, it allows it to do that. Now, the measure, again, passed unanimously without objection or opposition, but again, President Obama has promised to veto the bill, which would seem to make him appear to, of course, be insensitive towards those families, kind of at odds, maybe even with the American people, but at this point, he probably really doesn't care, as he's on his way out the door anyway. House Resolution 3815, also known as the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, or JASTA, creates an exception to sovereign immunity created by a 1976 law, which currently prohibits U.S. citizens from suing foreign countries for terrorism that kills Americans on U.S. soil. Now, so again, allegedly or apparently, certainly they would have us believe that they are doing a good, positive thing here. And it does mention, too, that even if President Obama were to veto this piece of legislation, Congress actually, if everybody sticks to their guns and sticks to their vote, Congress would have the ability to actually override the presidential veto. They would have the numbers on this. But the sovereign immunity law is something that has been invoked to guard Saudi Arabia from numerous lawsuits related to their involvement in the 9/11 terrorist attacks. As we know, as you may recall, 15 out of the 19 men, 15 out of the 19 hijackers, came from Saudi Arabia. They were citizens of that country. And this article mentions, for all the excitement about the House's unanimous passage of the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, JASTA, following a similar unanimous vote in the U.S. Senate in late May, it turns out that the bill offers nothing more than an illusion of the prospect of justice and accountability. It is indeed a cruel hoax. And this, unfortunately, is part and parcel for our government these days in terms of adding in a last-minute amendment that totally neuters the very purpose of the bill. And indeed, a last-minute amendment to the final draft of the bill included a provision that allows for the U.S. Attorney General, which, of course, happens to be Loretta Lynch, and the Secretary of State, which happens to be John Kerry, to stop any pending legislation against the Saudis. The section that was quietly inserted into the legislation, stay of actions pending state negotiations, basically would allow John Kerry to simply, quote, certify that the U.S. is engaged in good faith discussions with the foreign state defendant concerning the resolution of claims against the foreign state. In other words, and I'm sure you can figure it out for yourselves, but in other words, as long as a good old John Kerry and Saudi Arabia are having cordial, what they would deem productive discussions to try to resolve this, then any lawsuits that would be filed by the family members of the victims would be held up indefinitely. JASTA would have allowed families of victims of 9/11 to overcome the current restrictions barring them from suing foreign governments. But the new section of the bill would essentially allow the heads of the Justice and State Departments to, as I said, stay any lawsuits indefinitely. The inserted provisions allow for organizational heads to simply inform the judge hearing the case that the U.S. government has engaged with Saudi Arabia in diplomatic talks to resolve the issue. Additionally, the Attorney General can petition the court for an extension of the stay for additional 180-day for 6-month periods, effectively delaying lawsuits against the Saudis indefinitely. So basically, it's a bill that for all intents and purposes, when we strip it down and when we have this revelation, it's a bill that does nothing. As the article says, these dubious facts that have come to light reveal exactly why there was a unanimous vote for the legislation, as the legislators thought that they could trick Americans into believing that they had stood up for the victims of 9/11 and their families. However, in reality, they secretly knew the bill was nothing more than window dressing meant to appease a public looking for accountability regarding 9/11. Now, I do like to be fair here. And look, we've got 535 or whatever the number is members of Congress. I'm not going to throw 535 or so people, every single one of them, under the bus, because I'm sure there's some of them, maybe several of them, maybe many of them, that actually do have good intentions here. But again, it shows the corruption, it shows the lack of accountability, it shows the brokenness of Washington, D.C. and of our federal government as a whole, and at least two points here. And I think point one being that quite probably or quite possibly, again, many of our congressmen and women did not actually read the bill. And point two, even those who did read the bill maybe did not read or did not realize in time that this amendment had been snuck into the bill. Now, the person who's responsible for putting this amendment into the bill, again, completely neutering it, is the man who quite possibly is going to wind up being, well, it seems like he's going to be a Senate leader no matter what. He'll either be the Senate majority leader if the Democrats would take control of the Senate, or he'll be the Senate minority leader in Chuck Schumer. Again, the man who's been kind of hand-tapped. I mean, I'm sure they still have to have a vote and everything, but the man who's been hand-tapped, hand-picked to replace Harry Reid, who, of course, is leaving. But Chuck Schumer is the man who put this amendment in it. His office was contacted on this, and their statement was that if the administration seeks to use this new authority, it should be prepared to provide substantial evidence of good faith negotiations in the court. Schumer emphasized that this bill is very near and dear to my heart as a New Yorker because it would allow the victims of 9/11 to pursue some small measure of justice. Oh, that's sweet. But again, as pointed out here, a rather phony statement, because if it was really near and dear to his heart, then he wouldn't have secretly snuck in this provision, this amendment, at the last minute. And is there anybody? Well, actually, I'm sure there is, but is there anybody scummier? We can say there might be some as scummy. Is there anybody scummier than Chuck Schumer in Congress, by the way? I don't know how this man keeps getting elected other than the fact that, number one, he's in New York, and number two, again, that's unfortunately the disconnect between the electorate and Congress, the electorate that gets mad pretty much every single election and says, throw the bums out, but then they decide to vote the same bums back into their seat and keep them in Congress. But Schumer is the guy that went to, in addition to doing this, and this is more vile than what he did to Bernie Sanders, which some of us may not necessarily care what he did to Bernie Sanders, but he is the guy who I read went to Bernie Sanders after the Democratic primary was, for all intents and purposes, decided and over. And he told Bernie, look, and again, I'm kind of throwing my own words in, but he told Bernie Sanders, look, congratulations on running a valiant race to try to secure the Democratic Party nomination, but you did lose to Hillary. Again, when you look at things, it's not necessarily the case that he lost fair and square to Hillary, perhaps. But you did lose to Hillary, so you've got two choices here, Bernie. If you like your committee position in the Senate, which I don't recall which committee it was exactly, but a committee that apparently Schumer was in a position of power, probably the chair on, Schumer told Bernie Sanders, look, if you like your committee position in the Senate, then you've got basically one option here. If you want to keep your committee position, you can endorse Hillary Clinton. If you don't want to do that, and if you want to stick to your devoted, cherished principles, you can certainly do that as well, but you will no longer be on this particular committee in the Senate. And then, of course, after that is when Bernie Sanders decided he was going to endorse Hillary Clinton. But anyway, this is something that Chuck Schumer pulled on this particular bill. The lawyers for the victims' families claimed after the Senate vote that despite being given these false assurances by Schumer and by another guy on the other side who's kind of scummy and certainly a rhino or a conservative in name only in his own right, and Texas Senator John Cornyn, who was the co-sponsor of this bill, but they were assured falsely by Schumer and by Cornyn that there would have to be real and tangible proof to secure a stay, and these families now feel betrayed by Congress. You have a quote here from Kristen Breitweiser saying, how do I feel about the Justice Department being given this power? Not good, 9/11 widow Kristen Breitweiser told the New York Post. Their failure to bring their own Saudi indictment reveals how little they care about holding the Saudis accountable for either their funding or operational support of the 9/11 hijackers. It quotes here or mentions Paul Ryan, who visited with Saudi King Salman in Saudi Arabia in May. He'd gone on record as being against the JASTA bill. He wasn't initially expected to allow the legislation to the House floor for a vote after a Senate passage, but now that the bill is simply, as the article says, a toothless paper tiger meant to propagandize people into thinking there's a semblance of accountability for 9/11, he allowed the bill to be voted on in House. It passed unanimously. Again, a powerless bill, passed unanimously. And it says the Saudis worked fervently with their lobbying allies in D.C. to scuttle the legislation without success, but it obviously was watered down, even employing the Podesta Group, a lobbying firm co-founded by John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, and John Podesta's brother. I don't recall if his name is Tony, but anyway, his brother is very much in bed and very much in alignment with the Saudi government. But anyway, so here we have this bill that supposedly allows for victims' families to sue the Saudi government, only, no, it really doesn't, because all John Kerry has to do is say, well, we're in negotiations, we're in conversations with them, we're trying to work it out, and therefore those lawsuits get put on the back burner, and Loretta Lynch, again, can come in and keep those lawsuits on the back burner for 6 months or more, so long as our government and the Saudi government is talking about it. But anyway, that's just portion one of today's show, and hopefully that's enough to sicken, not that my general goal here is to sicken people, but hopefully that's enough to sicken at least some of you regarding what's going on here. And again, this whole need, this whole agenda to protect the Saudi government, to protect one of the more brutal noted violator of human rights, even though laughably the United Nations actually put Saudi Arabia in a position of heading up its own human rights panel or human rights council. That was one of the biggest jokes that could possibly be played on the world. But anyway, I also found this article here that concerns an interview. I don't agree with Rand Paul on everything that he says and does, every position that he takes. But overall, I think that he is somebody who does regard the Constitution, who does actually, and there's some things that he's disappointed on, but does actually try to serve the people, does actually try to serve with United States interests and constitutional interests first and foremost. And Rand Paul is making a motion to try to basically put a halt on funding to Saudi Arabia right now with a $1.1 billion U.S. arms sale to Saudi Arabia, which has been brutally bombing civilian targets in Yemen using U.S.-made weapons for more than a year now. And again, our government, by the way, is quite aware of this. Our government has supposedly said that they instructed Saudi Arabia not to, first of all, to be aware of the humanitarian crisis. There's a food shortage. There's a real humanitarian crisis that is going on in Yemen right now. And but anyway, Saudi Arabia bombed a hospital. They bombed a Doctors Without Borders facility, and they basically have killed a lot of innocent civilians in Yemen. And our government has basically done nothing more but pay lip service to this fact, while at the same time still trying to cover up for Saudi Arabia. But this really apparently bothered Wolf Blitzer of CNN that Rand Paul would actually be in opposition to a $1.1 billion, again, U.S. arms sale to Saudi Arabia, which normally I would add that the sainted, the morally superior mainstream media is normally quite willing to come down, especially if it's on their own country, is normally quite willing to come down rather harshly on military, on nations and the military of nations that purposefully or accidentally bomb or kill civilians. Certainly they're willing to do it if our soldiers, say accidentally do so. They're willing to do so if they're willing to highlight it if it happens with Israel's military. But it bothered Wolf Blitzer ever so much that Rand Paul would actually be in opposition to continuing to sell arms to Saudi Arabia, who, again, has been bombing civilian targets. Blitzer said that stopping the sale could result in fewer jobs for arms manufacturers. And, again, when was the media ever so quick to defend arms manufacturers, especially in this country, to begin with? But anyway, Blitzer said, so for you, to Rand Paul, this is a moral issue, he told the Kentucky Republican during Paul's appearance on CNN. Blitzer went on to say, because, you know, there's a lot of jobs at stake. Certainly, if a lot of these defense contractors stop selling warplanes, other sophisticated equipment to Saudi Arabia, there's going to be a significant loss of jobs, of revenue here in the United States. That's secondary from your standpoint? Paul replied, well, not only is it a moral question, it's a constitutional question. Our founding fathers, very directly and specifically, did not give the president the power to go to war. They gave it to Congress. So Congress needs to step up, and this is what I'm doing. Saudi Arabia began, and this from Liberty Blitzkrieg, by the way, Saudi Arabia began bombing Yemen in March of last year and has since been responsible for the majority of 10,000 deaths in the war so far. The U.S.-backed bombing coalition has been accused of intentionally targeting civilians, hospitals, factories, markets, schools, and homes. The situation is so bad that the Red Cross has started donating more units to Yemeni hospitals. The Obama administration has sold more weapons to the Saudis than any other administration, pledging more than $115 billion worth of small arms, tanks, helicopters, missiles, and aircraft. The author or the owner of the Liberty Blitzkrieg site says, but hey, the Saudis aren't really that bad, right? No, they're just one of the most barbaric, inhumane, terrorist-supporting states on planet Earth. And he mentioned several links, including U.S. government I'll have this on the Facebook page. U.S. government reaffirms total support for Saudi war crimes in Yemen. Saudi Arabia forces the United Nations to remove it from a list of child killers. This, by the way, was laughable. The United Nations, first of all, put Saudi Arabia at the head of a human rights council, human rights panel. That was laughable enough. Then they blacklisted Saudi Arabia for child rights abuses and for killing children. Saudi Arabia threatened to stop donating money to the United Nations, and the United Nations said, whoa, okay, we're sorry. We'll take that. We'll take your name off the list. Don't stop donating money. And there's also an article here, a link where he mentions record beheadings and the mass arrest of Christians. Is it ISIS? No, it's Saudi Arabia. Now that's from 2 years ago. But again, 2 years ago there was in the news Saudi Arabia who beheaded over 20 people. They arrested almost 30 Christians for publicly practicing their faith. They deported about 35 Ethiopian Christians for publicly practicing their faith. Saudi Arabia is a nation that simply will not allow any religious liberty whatsoever, that if you're going to publicly observe, publicly practice anything, it better be the Islamic faith, because if it isn't, you're simply not going to have a right to do so in Saudi Arabia. But anyway, one of the reasons certainly why our country, why our government, why our administration so carefully protects Saudi Arabia is certainly that they are massive, massive customers in terms of purchasing arms from this country. So, hey, you're not going to, even if they're barbaric, even if they're inhumane, even if they refer to atheists as terrorists, even if they are brutal towards gays, even if they repress women's rights, even if they, again, have no religious liberty, hey, if they're good-paying customers, none of that matters, right? But anyway, it is very, I'd say very easy to draw the conclusion that the Saudi government in some way was involved in the 9/11 terror attacks 15 years ago. I'll read a little bit here from the New York Post, and it's an article. It's titled, How the U.S. Actually Covered Up Saudi Role in 9/11. It's by Paul Speary, who has become somewhat of an, I guess you might say, somewhat of an expert on this. It was written in April of this year. He writes, in its report on the still-censored 28 pages implicating the Saudi government in 9/11, 60 Minutes last weekend said the Saudi role in the attacks has been soft-pedaled to protect America's delicate alliance with the oil-rich kingdom. Speary says that's quite an understatement. Actually, the kingdom's involvement was deliberately covered up at the highest levels of our government, and the cover-up goes beyond locking up 28 pages of the Saudi report in a vault in the U.S. Capitol basement. Investigations were throttled. Co-conspirators were left off the hook. I read, by the way, that Bob Graham, a former, he was a Democrat, but he was a former senator who was calling for, and you know, Democrat or not, he was on this point anyway, trying to encourage transparency, trying to encourage openness, honesty, trying to get to the bottom of things regarding 9/11. He was calling for the 28 pages to be declassified. Apparently, the FBI at one point detained him, took him aside, and tried to convince him not to continue to call for these pages to be declassified. But anyway, Speary says, case agents I've interviewed at the Joint Terrorism Task Forces in Washington and San Diego, the forward operating base for some of the Saudi hijackers, as well as detectives at the Fairfax County, Virginia Police Department, who also investigated several 9/11 leads, say virtually every road led back to the Saudi embassy in Washington, as well as the Saudi consulate in Los Angeles. Yet time and time again, they were called off from pursuing leads because of so-called diplomatic immunity. Those sources say the pages missing from the 9/11 Congressional Inquiry Report was compromised the entire final chapter. Now, this was before these pages were declassified. Details incontrovertible evidence gathered from both CIA and FBI case files of official Saudi assistance for at least two of the Saudi hijackers who settled in San Diego. They said that some information has leaked from the redacted section, including a flurry of pre-9/11 phone calls between one of the hijackers' Saudi handlers in San Diego and the Saudi embassy, and the transfer of some $130,000 from then Saudi ambassador Prince Bandar's family checking account to yet another of the hijackers' Saudi handlers in San Diego. Again, this is from the Saudi royal family, $130,000 transferred to one of the handlers of the hijackers from 9/11. And again, it just continues on from there. I don't want to run out of time here or try not to get cut off. So I'll skip over. I'll try to skim through it now at this point. Basically, again, the whole point is that the United States government tried to cut off, tried to dissuade, tried to cover up, tried to erase, tried to delete, and tried to put to a halt any attempt to connect the 9/11 attacks with the Saudi government. There's a quote here saying the Saudi ambassador funded two of the 9/11 hijackers through a third party, and this gentleman saying that he should be treated as a terrorist suspect, as should other members of the Saudi elite class who the U.S. government knows are currently funding the global jihad. After, again, this guy Bandar, who was, again, the Saudi prince, Saudi ambassador Prince Bandar, he held sway over the FBI. He met 2 days after 9/11 on September 13th with President Bush in the White House, where the two old family friends shared cigars on the Truman balcony. The FBI evacuated dozens of Saudi officials from multiple cities pretty much immediately after 9/11, including at least one Osama bin Laden family member on the terror watch list. Instead of interrogating the Saudis, FBI agents acted as security escorts for them, even though it was known at the time that 15 of the 19 hijackers were, again, Saudi citizens. Even Anwar al-Awlaki, the hijacker's spiritual advisor, escaped our grasp. In 2002, the Saudi-sponsored cleric was detained at JFK on passport fraud charges, only to be released into custody of a Saudi representative. It wasn't until 2011 that Awlaki was brought to justice by way of a CIA drone strike. But again, any time that they had these guys to interrogate them, to bring them to justice, to question them, they let them go, and they even escorted them out of the country under the guise of and under the excuse of diplomatic immunity. And, you know, I wish I had more time to get into this. Like I said, 30, 45 minutes, time flies quite quickly. But hopefully it's hitting on the basic premise here that our government, that our FBI had every reason in the world to be aware of, to acknowledge, to suspect that 9/11 was funded, not necessarily planned out, but was funded by influences and by personages in the Saudi government, and they looked the other way. And this from foreignpolicy.com, and again, it details the 28 pages that, again, were declassified. Says, what we know about Saudi Arabia's role in 9/11, the Saudi government still says it had no connection to the hijackers. Newly released classified information proves otherwise. And again, it goes on to talk about, obviously, the 28 pages. I'm going to read. They have some excerpts here. I don't know if you ever actually read these pages or any commentary on them yourselves or not. They have some excerpts here that they describe as devastating, and they indeed are quite devastating. From page 415, while in the United States, some of the September 11th hijackers were in contact with and received support and assistance from individuals who may be connected to the Saudi government. At least two of those individuals were alleged by some to be Saudi intelligence officers. On page 417, one of the individuals identified in the pages as a financial supporter of two of the 9/11 hijackers, Osama Basnan, later received a significant amount of cash from a member of the Saudi royal family during a 2002 trip to Houston. Page 418, another Saudi national with close ties to the Saudi royal family is the subject of FBI counterterrorism investigations. Page 418 and 419, detained Al-Qaeda leader Abu Zubaydah had in his phone book the unlisted number for the security company that managed the Colorado residence of then Saudi ambassador to the United States, again, the same Prince Bandar bin Sultan. Page 421, dated July 2, 2002, indicates incontrovertible evidence that there is support for these terrorists inside the Saudi government. Page 426, Bazdin's wife was receiving money from Princess Haifa bint Sultan, the wife of the Saudi ambassador, Prince Bandar bin Sultan. Again, this Bazdin, who was a financial supporter of two of the 9/11 hijackers, receiving money from the wife of, again, the Saudi ambassador to the United States. Her correct name, actually, Princess Haifa bint Faisal. The General Counsel, page 436 of the U.S. Treasury Department, David Offhauser, testified that offices of the Saudi charity Al-Haramain have significant contacts with extremist Islamic extremists. CIA officials also testified that they were making progress on their investigations of Al-Haramain. The head of the central office is complicit in supporting terrorism, and it also raised questions about then Saudi Interior Minister Prince Nayef. This gentleman at foreignpolicy.com continues to establish and talk about connections that he knew were already there from his previous investigations between the Saudi government and the 9/11 hijackers. Again, 15 out of the 19 who were, of course, citizens originating from Saudi Arabia. Now, again, in the remaining time, why would our government go to such lengths to protect and to try to whitewash Saudi involvement in the 9/11 terror attacks? I think we can say part of it is because they're such a so-called good customer, if you will. But also, it goes back to, I personally believe, the petrodollar. You know, the idea that this from 2013, and you quite possibly know yourselves about the petrodollar, but 2013, it was actually updated this year, but why Saudi Arabia matters in helping to keep the U.S. dollar in the world's reserve currency. Basically, we've had an agreement with Saudi Arabia going back to the 1970s that they and other OPEC nations, when they sell oil, they will price their oil in U.S. dollars, keeping the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency, and that they would only accept U.S. dollars in payment in exchange for their oil. This basically allows us to maintain a strong dollar in that sense, at least as the United States reserve, as the world currency. It allows us to continue our free spending ways because, again, the dollar is looked at as a world reserve currency. We can incur debt after debt after debt, continuing to skyrocket our debt burden and just, in theory anyway, print more U.S. dollars and supposedly solve the problem. Of course, it doesn't. But it's this whole idea that we've entered into this arrangement with Saudi Arabia, with OPEC, that as long as we're on good terms with one another, as long as we kind of do the Saudis' bidding even and don't make them look too bad, they'll continue to hold up their end of the bargain and they'll continue to only accept U.S. dollar payments for oil sales. And, but there's a threat to this whole house of cards, and there has been a threat to this whole house of cards anyway, in the form of a nation like Iran, who earlier this year decided that they wanted to start selling oil again, but they wanted to be paid not in U.S. dollar, but in euros. We've got this whole insidious relationship with Saudi Arabia, where as long as they're going to keep buying arms from us, and as long as they're going to keep selling oil in U.S. dollars, then we're going to look the other way with their human rights violations. And sadly, even with any and all connections to the very terror attacks that happened, again, 15 years ago tomorrow on 9/11 in our own country within our own borders. You know, it's certainly not a very good situation. It's actually rather sickening, and unfortunately, it's been going on for quite some time. Unfortunately, though, I am out of time. Again, it's an unfortunate thing with the time limit.